We got a lot to talk about with NBA free agency starting this week, starting off with my report that Anthony Davis and LeBron James are targets for the Golden State Warriors. Dave DeFore joins me from The Athletic to discuss that and a whole lot else happening around the NBA and what could be a very, very crazy week of trades and signings. All that's coming up now with me and Dave DeFore. All right, baby, we got some crazy NBA free agency news already to talk about it all. Dave DeFore from The Athletic. Dave, what's up, man?
Yeah, I am okay. This is an interesting time of year, and I was expecting to have a really nice, quiet week. So I'm great, man. Life is really good. We've got a lot to talk about.
It is not nice and quiet. It is loud and crazy right now. We'll start off with my report on Sunday night over at Yahoo Sports that the Warriors want both LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I wrote that on Yahoo Sports on Sunday night, as well as some other things we'll get into later. But this morning, the first domino really fell. Draymond Green opted out of his contract, Shams Charania reported, and he reiterated my report that the Warriors would like to pursue both LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So we are potentially moving towards a reality in which we see LeBron unite with his Olympics buddy, Stephen Curry, with his BFF, Draymond Green, and his former co-star with the Lakers winning a championship together, and Anthony Davis from moving from Los Angeles up to the Bay Area. Dave, I think it would be one of the funnest possible combination of players we have ever seen in NBA history. Yes, it might go sour. It might be like Karl Malone joining the Lakers, or Steve Nash and Dwight Howard joining the Lakers, or the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Brooklyn Nets. It's possible it would go that route. But I still think this team would be awesome and fun to watch and really competitive and have an outside shot at winning the championship. And I hope it happens. But what were your first thoughts when you saw the news last night?
It's funny. Okay, this would be the funniest team that they could possibly put together. And it would be amazing for 30 games. The 30 games that they all played together in the regular season would be amazing. But the truth is, man, the NBA just doesn't work like this. I know you said they'd have an outside chance of winning a title if they got there. You know, what are the odds that all these guys could get through the season with a high enough seed to make this, you know, a playoff run feasible for them? I just feel like it's pretty slim. From a nerdy basketball fan perspective, this would be awesome. It would be a lot of fun. And I think that offensively, we would see some stuff. It would feel like an all-star game when they actually played together, especially Steph and LeBron. I just don't see how this is a realistic basketball team in 2026. Like, it just doesn't make any sense on paper. Doesn't make any sense. And that paper is birth certificates. That's why it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, look, Dave, yes, they would not be the favorites. That would still be the Thunder or the Spurs, these younger teams with better stars. That's for sure. Yeah. But this would raise their ceiling, undeniably, sure. I think, to be able to flip a mid-level exception into LeBron James, who's still one of the 20-25 best players in the league, who had stretches last year where he was still one of the 10 best players in the league, and then to turn Jimmy Butler, who's out until February,
right,
with a torn ACL in his late 30s, into Anthony Davis, who, yes, has his own durability concerns. He's only played over 70 games once the last 7 years, played only 20 games last year. That's all true. All of it's true. Mm-hmm. But it would raise their ceiling around Stephen Curry in ways that they haven't in recent years since 2022, when they did see a good fortune on their way to the NBA Finals, where they did win it with a nice path on the way there. So you never know what can happen. And I just think for the Warriors, I have ripped them for years now, saying that they were just taking for granted the end of this Stephen Curry era, the end of this Steph Draymond era, in which Steph is still a top 5 to 10 player in the league. And finally, they could be actually cashing in. Is it too late? Probably. They probably should have traded Jonathan Kuminga 2 years ago for one of the many other guys they pursued. Lauri Markkanen, Paul George, like, you name it. They've pursued that star player, and they were unwilling to deal Kuminga of all people. But the fact is that this opportunity is here now. I think LeBron to the Warriors has a real chance of happening. The AD part we'll talk about in a second, but the fact Draymond Green actually opted out this morning of his contract, that is something that in recent days, so on Sunday night when I wrote that on Yahoo, I had heard some rumblings that Draymond Green might actually be opting out. I didn't put it in the story because I didn't have it solid enough to do it from speaking to enough sources on it. But there was rumblings about it. It actually happened. And this happens, I think, after 2 or 3 days after some trusted local Warriors reporter said it sounds like the Warriors were expecting him to opt in to his deal. So there's been an about face here. This could be a signal that Draymond, who is very close to LeBron, who is a clutch client, knows that LeBron could very well be going to Golden State. And LeBron alone, forget about the AD side of things, LeBron alone going to Golden State would just send shockwaves through the whole basketball world. What would your take be of that decision by LeBron, Dave, if it does happen? And what would it mean for the Warriors from a pure basketball standpoint as well?
I mean, LeBron James still an all-NBA level player, right? I mean, he's an all-star. Yeah. I mean, this is undeniably true. And what we watched him do, I mean, it was, listen, he had such a great little playoff run where we all got to feel like, wow, LeBron's the man again. I think it showed that you can still run large portions of your offense through LeBron. And when you, if you paired him with a guy like Draymond Green and Steph Curry, right? Guys that are great at operating without the ball in their hands, creating things with, you know, without a lot of just dribbling, I think LeBron would fit right in there. You know, I, what he needs to do is to be able to coast through the regular season. You want him to play, I don't know, 55 games, maybe just keep in shape and then have him ready for the playoff run. I think that on the court, it's a great fit. I mean, we've seen it in the Olympics, and I know that that's not really a perfect sample compared to the NBA. But I do think that offensively, if you paired one of the greatest basketball minds to ever play with Stephen Curry, who's one of the, I mean, he is the greatest shooter to ever play, but also one of the best players to ever play. I think that you're going to, again, the ceiling is wide open once you get to the playoffs. It's how do you defend? It's all these other questions that they would have to answer. And I think it's actually a better fit for him than maybe going to Cleveland or going to Miami, because at least in Golden State, you kind of understand LeBron is going to be treated a certain way. And I don't think that the internal politics of a basketball team that happens, you know, if he goes to Cleveland, he's got to share the ball with Donovan Mitchell, James Harden. It's very similar to what he would just be leaving in LA. If he goes to Miami, you know, obviously there's the Giannis thing. Giannis wants to be the man there. I don't know if that's a good fit from just a, you know, again, personality standpoint. I think Golden State makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons. It's just the stuff on the court just makes me nervous.
Yeah, I think the injury aspect is what would be the most nerve-wracking part. But ultimately, the basketball fit could be pretty beautiful.
It'd be fun, man. I mean,
it would be.
That Olympic run was amazing, and it really wasn't that long ago. You know, we just saw these guys play together. I think that, again, Steve Kerr is also a genius coach. I think that he would figure out ways to use LeBron probably more in the post, you know, have him running. Like, maybe he's the guy that you're running split cuts off of. And now all of a sudden, that's a more dangerous weapon. I think that the hardest part when I envision LeBron joining them is how you get to the playoffs.
Especially in the loaded West. And I think that's where, like, getting Anthony Davis and hoping that he has one of his 60 plus, 65 plus game seasons would be of the utmost benefit. And that's why I think, so look, Jimmy Butler last week did a event with the Warriors for their New Jersey sponsor. And he spoke to some local reporters after that event about it. And Anthony Slater, the great Warriors beat writer, had a quote in the story where Butler, you know, pretty much said, if I'm traded, I'm traded. Like, it's happened before, right? Like, it's happened to me before. And if they want somebody who can help them out sooner, they got to go and do that. I get it. And I thought that was a pretty illuminating quote from Butler, because I'm not reporting this aspect, but I would imagine that the Warriors have been transparent with Butler. Like, hey, we have talked to the Bucks about Giannis. We have talked to the Clippers about Kawhi. We have talked to the Wizards about Anthony Davis. I'd imagine those conversations have been there rather than doing it behind his back, because he knows that they talked in February after his tour as ACL. Like, he knows, he's not stupid. He's been through this before. He's a professional. So I think him saying that was an indication that he knows that these conversations are being had, and understandably so. Because to your point, Dave, when it comes to how loaded the Western Conference is, if you don't have, let's say the Warriors get LeBron, and but they keep Butler, they don't get Davis.
Right.
If you don't have Butler until February or March, like you might be the 11 seed, the 10 seed, the 12 seed. I don't know where you're going to be, but you're probably not a top 6 seed in the Western Conference without one of your best players. And so if you're able to get a guy who can play in October in Anthony Davis and turn Butler, who's out with a torn ACL at 38 years old, plus one first, two firsts, I mean, I think of like for the Wizards side of things, they would need draft capital back in a deal. The Warriors can only trade up to two first round draft picks. They can trade four swaps in a deal. So my understanding is that the Wizards aren't, they're not a big in a big rush here to deal AD. Yeah. They would need some draft capital back in return for him. So I'd say like a 2028 first, maybe a future first, a 2033. I wouldn't necessarily go that far if I were the Warriors, but if it means getting AD and LeBron and Draymond back on a discount and Kristaps Porzingis back or something along those lines, maybe it is worth it just to go totally all in around Steph and Draymond and this old core, this big four, and just say, screw it. Let's go for it, despite what the draft capital is for injury-prone Anthony Davis. Would you do this deal that you see on screen, 80 for Jimmy Butler plus two future first and 28 and 33?
Yeah, absolutely. You already said you've got Steph Curry. Why not? They should have done this years ago. I mean, this is actually the culmination of failures by the Warriors front office for the last, I don't know, 7-8 years. It's not just the last couple. And so is this perfect? No. This is a swing, though. And it's one that if it doesn't pan out, yes, we're gonna hammer them and say, wow, of course, you can't just have an old team anymore. But if you do nothing and you go back into the season, your big signing was you bring back Al Horford. I mean, I don't think that's a good way to do it either. So, you know, when you look at the landscape that is around in free agency, there aren't a lot of players out there that they can go and get anyway. They don't really have the money. Like, this is one way to do it is by trading Jimmy Butler's deal. Now, would it be better if they got Kawhi? Maybe. I don't know. I think what Anthony Davis can do when he's healthy for a defense, that's what these guys would need. But it's that when healthy, if healthy, and, you know, how many games can he play? If he can give them 65 games and be ready for a playoff run, great. But is that 65 games enough to not be in the play-in? That's the thing that worries me. You're gonna have to win a lot of games in the West to be in the top six, and I just don't know if they'll have the availability. But I would do this deal in a heartbeat. Like you said, you've got to have a player in that slot, that 50-plus million-dollar contract. You can't just have a guy who's sitting around until February, and then he's going to have to ramp up. Like, it's not like it's guaranteed Jimmy Butler comes back, and day one, he's Jimmy Butler. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think you probably got to do it.
I'd go for it. I just say, screw it. Let's go for it. Let's try to go for ring number five, right? Let's just try to do this miraculous run and try to make it happen. I think, you know, the Wizard side of things here, in my story, I mentioned how all indications are that the Wizards are signaling they're happy to keep Anthony Davis. And I think that's true. They just re-signed Trae Young. They traded for AD for a reason earlier in the year. Now, that said, I am intrigued by something their general manager, Will Dawkins, said. He said on the ESPN Live draft show that, you know, they're going to wait until August to talk extension with Anthony Davis. Wait till August. Like, wait till August for what? So he can sign for $275 million. They're not giving him that money. So what do we wait until August really for? Like, if you're not going to give him that money on August 6th when he's eligible for 4 years, $275 million, what are we waiting for? My gut feeling is, and this is not me reporting this, just my gut feeling is that the Wizards were more excited about keeping Trae Young than they are about Anthony Davis, and that Trae was more excited about staying in Washington than Anthony Davis would be. That's in part because AD is older. He's in his 30s already. Trae Young is still in his 20s. He still has years down the road, whereas AD, there's more urgency to win now and try to go get that ring, try to have a parade, as he said himself, after the season concluded with the Wizards. I think that the Wizards are more open to dealing AD than perhaps they might be signaling to other teams. What's going to be very fascinating here, though, is to see, are there more teams than the Warriors? Could the Portland Trailblazers be interested, as others have reported? Mm-hmm. Is there some surprise teams out there that could be interested in Anthony Davis, especially if he's willing to sign for a lower amount of money to be in a winning situation? And why wait until August for an extension? I think the Wizards are open to dealing now. It's just a matter of getting something back in return that makes sense for them, which is why draft capital would have to be out there. But I don't think it's a guarantee that we see the Warriors get AD. I don't think that's a guarantee, but they're definitely trying for it.
Yeah, I mean, they should. They should definitely try. And look, the 2028 first, I don't even know what kind of value that'll have. And by the time you get to 2033, we may be under completely draft, you know, different mm-hmm. draft rules. So who knows what the value of these picks are. And I think that you could live a little bit in that mystery box zone with those picks and just say, hey, we'll send them out, take a swing. And if it works, it's great, you know, but if it doesn't, are we really going to miss those picks anyway? I think that, yes, you got to play for now.
And we'll be right back after this break. You mentioned Kawhi Leonard earlier. There's a lot of Kawhi Leonard stuff in the news right now, and it seems like there's a real chance he's on the move. Shams Charania said on ESPN this morning that the Raptors are the only team Kawhi has signaled that he'd be willing to extend with if he's traded away from the Clippers. That's pretty newsworthy, considering the fact that we know Dallas, according to Sam Amick, Christian Clark, and some of your other coworkers over there at The Athletic reported, Dallas has interest. And Kawhi Leonard, we know from last week, Brian Windhorst over at ESPN said that the Pistons would have interest if Kawhi Leonard were willing to extend. There's been other reporting that he is not willing to extend there. I believe that's the Stein line that reported that. But with Kawhi Leonard, we very well could have a Raptors reunion there for Brandon Ingram and other assets in return going to the Clippers. To me, Dave, the Clippers should be jumping at an opportunity to deal Kawhi Leonard. Yeah. 34 years old, just had the best regular season of his career, 28 points per game on nearly 50-40-90, he played 65 games. This is your chance to end it. No more silence, no more injuries, no more Uncle Dennis, no more load management, no more playoff absences, no more aspiration. Move on. There's an opportunity. There's an escape hatch that has opened up for the Clippers, and they should jump through it before it closes. Get rid of them. Get something back in return. Have a nice, fun team.
You said 34. Actually, today is his 35th birthday. So this is his age 35 season
happy
coming
birthday.
Up. And he just had one of the healthiest years in recent memory. And I think you're right. Like, you're selling at the highest his value is ever going to be for the rest of his career. Actually, you know, all NBA season guy would have been, if they were a better team, he's in the MVP mix with the numbers that he put up and with the dominance that he played with. I mean, this was an old school Kawhi Leonard season. It felt a lot like that 2019 season where, you know, oftentimes I was wondering, wow, is Kawhi Leonard, you know, a top five player again? Is that where we're at? And I think that Toronto, if he goes there, that's a really nice fit. I think that he gives them, you know, quite a bit of creation on the wing, a guy who can get you a bucket, which is, you know, one of the things that they need, but also the ball doesn't stick with him like it does with Brandon Ingram. I think that he can work in the flow of their offense quite well. Now, personally, I thought the best fit was going to be going back to San Antonio. He could slide into that four spot right next to Wemby. They all of a sudden just become this overwhelming team from a talent perspective, but I don't know if that one's going to actually happen. Toronto, you know, he had one of the healthiest years of his career since his injury when he was up there with Alex McKechnie, and maybe going back is something, you know, a place that he can trust with his body. Maybe that's part of this, but the Clippers, wow, they should feel very lucky today.
Yeah, they should be very lucky, to be feeling very lucky today, especially at least if Ballmer is willing to trade Kawhi. And I think he's crazy if he's not willing to.
Well, the plan was to be out of the Kawhi business next season anyway. I don't think that they had any intention of signing him to an extension. So if you can actually get something for him, you got to do it. Now, whether they want to take Brandon Ingram back or find a third team or however they make the mechanics work, I think that's going to be the telling part about the Clippers. Are they desperate to, you know, move on from Kawhi versus are they just trying to make the best deal, you know, to set themselves up for the future?
It's definitely an interesting challenge there for them. And I think one aspect to note in regards to the Clippers is that Vinny Goodwill, my old coworker at Yahoo, who's now at ESPN, he said this morning, I think it was on Get Up, and he said that he's heard that the Clippers really want Jaylen Brown. And so I don't know if Boston's a team for Kawhi. I have not heard of that at all. I can't imagine Boston would be doing, you know, cartwheels to get Brandon Ingram either. But if the Clippers could get draft capital plus Brandon Ingram and then flip draft capital and whatever salary to Boston for Jaylen Brown, I could see something like that making some sense for sure. Mm-hmm. I think for both sides, because Boston wants 4 first round draft picks for Jaylen Brown. The Clippers could get to 4 first round draft picks after getting rid of Kawhi Leonard for whatever picks they get. They have 3 future firsts already. They could have 5 tradable plus swaps. We don't know the exact number yet, but the Clippers could get there to a number where it's like, oh, you could turn now 35-year-old Kawhi Leonard into, you know, a guy who's 5, 6 years younger, Jaylen Brown. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, please. If you're the Clippers, because then you're young and you're still good. You're still competitive rather than losing your best player in Kawhi. So I think that's an intriguing subplot here when it comes to Kawhi Leonard trades, is the potentially them pivoting it into Jaylen Brown.
Yeah. If they wind up with Jaylen Brown out of this and they keep, you know, their Keaton Wagler and they've got Darius Garland, that's a pretty good reboot by the Clippers to go from this old team, you know, the last couple seasons, to a much younger team, a team that actually is set up from an age perspective to compete in the NBA. It's all about, you know, how do they fill out the rest of that roster as far as how competitive they can be in the West. But Jaylen Brown, the conversation around Jaylen Brown is very funny. We watched him be, you know, he was 6th in the MVP vote this past season. And we watched him be what I thought was pretty dominant during the regular season. He had the best season of his career. And it seems like he's being viewed as this distressed asset, when the truth is, this is one of the more valuable players who's become available. Doesn't have an injury history, can give you, you know, 70 plus games every single year. Has won a finals MVP, won a title, you know, has always been in the mix in the playoffs. I mean, he and Jason Tatum, one of the sad things about seeing them break up is how successful they've been. So I do think that, you know, if the Clippers can wind up with Jaylen Brown, they've maybe had a better summer than anybody else, because moving on from Kawhi, getting something for him, and then winding up with another franchise superstar that's 5 years younger, I think that that's a pretty successful summer.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're like, why is Dave Dufour defending Jaylen Brown? Of course, Jaylen Brown's a good player. No. And you're not on, well, you must not be on social media, because what happened was Bobby Marks from ESPN was on SiriusXM last week, and he was talking about Jaylen Brown, what the market could look like for him, and how it's not exactly clear what the return could be for Jaylen Brown. And he quoted an analytics guy from an NBA team who said that they view Jaylen Brown as the 7th best player on a team. And Bobby, in this SiriusXM interview, immediately was like, this is outrageous. Like, that's a bit too strong. Like, you can be a little down on Jaylen because some of the inefficiencies as a perimeter scorer, some of the turnovers and all that. But 7th best player is outrageous, is what Bobby Marks said. However,
yeah,
the clip that didn't get clipped. That didn't get clipped. The I had an analytics guy tell me we view Jaylen Brown as a 7th best player on a team. That individual quote went super, super, super viral. It caused a analytics versus eye test discourse, and most of all, it caused Jaylen Brown to crash out on social media. Like, he was quoting stuff about it, going wild and saying, you know, analytics have and are ruining the game we play. We playing AI hoops. He said, among other things, he shared videos on his Instagram stories, yada, 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 yada. Like, a lot happened. Anyway, the fact is that with Jaylen Brown, the discourse is outrageous, as you said, Dave. He is a high-level basketball player, one of the 15 best players in the league last year, one of the 15 to 20 best, period, when you look at, when you stack them all up when healthy. And he is somebody who just, to me, when I think about Jaylen Brown, I think of a guy that just plays with no fear. He constantly brings energy and toughness and physicality to the floor. And he did that all game long for a Boston Celtics team that many people thought was going to be right down there at the bottom of the standings next to the Indiana Pacers, who were also without their star player, Tyrese Halliburton, just like Jason Tatum was out. And yet he dragged them to a 2 seed, winning over 50 games. Jaylen Brown was unbelievable last year against all odds. And so this is the guy who's won a finals MVP, made the playoffs every year, has his flaws, without a doubt, as a perimeter shooter, as a playmaker. All that's true. But that doesn't take away from what he does on the floor and how he's gotten better every year and continues to improve even despite having all the success. I think it's crazy talk that what we've seen against Jaylen Brown, and any team that gets him is getting a really high-level basketball player.
Well, number one, there's no analytical model that's going to call Jaylen Brown the seventh best player on a team. It just doesn't exist. Because if it did, you wouldn't have a job. Because that's nowhere close to the eye test. And obviously nowhere close to the results that you see on the court. That being said, like, Jaylen Brown, again, a guy who can be your number one, I think that analytics have a hard time encapsulating what that player does for a team. You know, if you think about what Jalen Brunson did in the finals, and in the first, you know, 4 games of that series, awful shooting. You know, you look, he had a 7 for 25. The numbers are not looking great, but you can't go back and watch those games and tell me that he wasn't the best player on the Knicks team on the offensive end. I mean, just 100% was super important to them winning the title. And obviously he had that great Game 5, but that's really what the difference is. It's the divide in explaining that a number one guy's job is different than a number seven guy's job. And so it's easier to be the number seven guy. You always come in, you're playing against the bench guys. You're playing against two-way guys. Jaylen Brown's playing against the best competition every single night, and the best defender is oftentimes guarding him. That's his job. His job is to sometimes shoot 30% on a given night. Someone's going to do it. And it's his job to do it. So I don't know, man. This is a little bit of Bobby being taken out of context, obviously, like where he, you know, refuted that statement. But also, I just think players are not necessarily treated fairly when we get into the analytics conversation. Because, I mean, I understand taking it personally. I mean, I don't know if, you know, if you want to crash out on the internet over it. But yeah, we're back to analytics guys being called nerds. We've got hoopers versus nerds again. We're back, Kevin.
The world is healing, Dave. That's what's happening. The world is healing.
Now, well, I will say, hey, Jaylen coming out with receipts and saying nobody's won more games than me in the regular season and playoff. That's my kind of analytics. I do like that. Hey, I win. and he's right. I mean, he does win. He's been a part of winners. So I think that stuff that matters a little bit more.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, Jaylen has in a way gone from like overrated to underrated all in a matter of, I don't know, 3 months.
It's the Twitch stream. Like it's the Twitch stream. It's overexposure, right? Like if you never knew what Jaylen Brown was doing, you would be like, wow, Jaylen Brown's so good. I mean, it's like Kawhi. That mystery about him actually adds to his player mystique.
Kind of funny if the Clippers do go from Kawhi Leonard, this mysterious player, to Jaylen Brown, who he's doing co-post on Instagram, collaboration posts for with Jaylen Brown clips, which is definitely run by somebody on his team, to be clear.
He's doing speed runs on Mario, I think, next week. I think that's his plan.
Oh, boy. Watch it live on Twitch. FCHWPO, whatever it is, that acronym. But regarding Jaylen Brown potential trade destinations, Sam Amick at The Athletic said that the Portland Trailblazers are considered the front runner for Jaylen Brown. And so I got a fake trade to put together here for you, Dave, where the Celtics send Jaylen Brown and Sam Hauser to Portland, and Boston gets back Scoot Henderson, Jeremy Grant, Shaedon Sharpe in the four first round draft picks that they desire in return for Jaylen Brown. From Boston's side of things, like, this would fit what they want. They get four first. They get Scoot Henderson in the final year of his rookie scale deal. Jeremy Grant, a veteran on a short-term deal. He can fill some of the minutes by Jaylen Brown and Shaedon Sharpe, a bit of a wild card guy to add to your rotation and four first-round picks. From the Portland side of it, would you do this? Are you willing to give all of this for Jaylen Brown, given your existing roster, giving Denny Avdia, Donovan Kling, and everything else you already have there? Would you do this?
I think it puts you into playoff contention. So, yeah, I think you go ahead and do it. You know, Jaylen Brown being the best player in the trade, that's the thing I look at first. Who's getting the best player in the trade? And I think Portland being able to add Jaylen Brown to what they've already got. And you're really not – Shaedon Sharpe, I think, is going to be a good player. He's not a playoff, like, starter right now. Jaylen Brown is. Sam Hauser, I think, can start for you in the playoffs. Scoot, he's still a project to a certain degree. Jeremy Grant, that's a bad contract. And the four firsts, look, if you're going to field a competitive team, you're going to be trading your first round picks anyway. That's how it works. So I actually don't hate this deal for Portland. I don't know if I love it for the Celtics. The Jeremy Grant contract is an albatross that you're going to have to try to move. And again, the nebulous value of these future first round picks, I don't know what they, you know, what are they going to be worth in 2029, 2030 if the league changes the draft lottery rules again. So I would say, yeah, you take that draft capital just because that's how this works. But I don't love the Celtics side of this. Anybody getting Jaylen Brown, I'm pretty much happy with. I think that they're going to be happy with the trade. This is it's not a great one for the Celtics. I do think Scoot getting a chance to develop there would probably be better than Portland. I just think what we've seen out of the Celtics development staff has been pretty remarkable. And Shaedon Sharpe would play right away, obviously. But, you know, would he benefit like more than anyone by being able to play with Jason Tatum? I think so. You know, a guy that draws that much attention. So, you know, maybe it's a good deal, but I don't think it's such a step back for Boston from a competitive standpoint that I don't love it.
I'd be all over it if I'm Boston, personally. I'd be all over it. I know Shaedon Sharpe has his flaws as a player, for sure.
Yeah.
Jeremy Grant, only 2 years left. I'm not stressing too hard about that. He's got this year at $34 million and then $36 million in player option next year. To me, that's not as big of a deal as you feel it is, personally. And then with Scoot Henderson, I mean, look, he had 18 points in game one against the Spurs, 31 in game two, 21 in game three, and then zero, and then five.
Right.
So, like, okay. he really stunk it up in game four and five. But we saw the flashes in games one, two, and three, and we saw the flashes of stardom in the lead up to the playoffs as well when he was really shooting the ball well for Portland. And so with Scoot entering year four at 22 years old, a guy who is a number three pick in the draft, why not? And with Shaedon Sharpe, he's in year one of a four-year deal worth $90 million. It's not like this outrageous deal for a guy who's 23 years old, an elite athlete. If the Celtics could turn him into a more consistent three-point shooter, I think it would open up really everything for him, because we know he's a great athlete. He's a downhill attacker. And so I think that gives you two young guys to build with today that have a potential, you know, ceiling to build towards. And then Jeremy Grant, you know, a filler older guy with four first round draft picks. I can't imagine
seeing
a team do better. It is.
Yeah, it's a haul. I just don't, you know, if I'm Boston, I don't love it personally. You know, I think that you could probably get a better young player, and maybe you get it first from a team that's not going to be very good. I mean, what's Portland's ceiling going to be when they have Jaylen Brown? You know, I think that makes them a lot better than they are currently. But that being said, I think that this might be the best deal that they can get as far as just the overall total package. I just don't like these players as much.
I think that's fair. And, like, I think in terms of other packages, Michael Scotto at Hoopsite floated out there that the Hornets could be a team for Jaylen Brown as well. Mm-hmm. And Scotto wrote in his column last weekend that the Celtics liked Naz Reid and their conversations with Minnesota involving Jaylen Brown prior to the LaMelo Ball deal. And so you put all the pieces together here, like Charlotte, They trade for LaMelo Ball, or they trade away LaMelo Ball to the Minnesota Timberwolves, as we talked about in my podcast last Thursday. Then this weekend, they traded away Miles Bridges to the Phoenix Suns. They traded away Bridges, a 29 first, a 27 second, and the Hornets got back Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal, and a 33 first round draft pick unprotected from the Phoenix Suns. We'll talk about the Suns side in a minute, but like on the Hornets side of things, the conversations I've had with people around the NBA have been, is there something bigger coming? Is there another move they're building towards, or are they just saying, we're taking a step back? We're going to take a step back this year. We are not quite where we seem to be with our great second half run last year. I think there's a real possibility that they are in on Jaylen Brown or somebody else. You think Jaylen Brown, the connection with Charles Lee, the Charlotte head coach, a former assistant in Boston, you think about the team needs for Charlotte as well. They have a lot of perimeter-oriented players. They need more guys who get to the basket, who can get downhill. Jaylen Brown can help you there. I think he makes sense from a roster standpoint in terms of elevating this team, but also makes sense from a fit standpoint in terms of Boston being able to get a guy who can help like Naz Reid and draft capital. The Hornets have a lot of it to give up. They can give up a lot to get Jaylen Brown and still have a lot left over. And so I think it makes some mutual sense for both sides, both Boston and for Charlotte, to find a deal here that could make some sense.
This might be the deal I like best, because I think not adding Naz Reid to the Celtics and then those Hornets picks, I think that that's a pretty good deal for getting Jaylen Brown. That being said, it's the lack of young player in the deal, I think, could be a sticking point. Again, Boston, like that, they need, to add a prospect in this deal. You don't move, again, your second best player or best player and not get anything thinking about the future. But the fit for Jaylen in Charlotte is perfect. It's perfect. He's exactly the guy that they could need, that they could use. And Con Knipple and Brandon Miller are the guys that would benefit the most from Jaylen Brown's consistency. You know, their ability to stretch the floor around a guy who can attack and get downhill the way Jaylen does, it opens up a world of possibilities. And as sad as I am to see the LaMelo Ball era in Charlotte end, I think that one of the big issues that they had, you know, during even that winning streak that they had, is that it was so dependent on LaMelo and how much he touched the ball. And so they're going to have to find a way to replace that. Jaylen Brown could do it. He can step in. He can be that high usage guy. And I think everyone else's efficiency goes up because he's so consistent.
Last season in Charlotte, out of pick and rolls and isolations, according to Synergy Sports, LaMelo Ball took 19% of his shots at the rim. Brandon Miller took 19% of his shots at the rim. So they're getting rid of LaMelo touches. Kobe White last season with both Chicago and Charlotte took 44% of his shots at the rim out of the pick and rolls and isolations. Con Knipple, 30%. You're going to see him get more touches too. Jaylen Brown was 32%. And so I think you look at everything Charlotte's done this offseason, or even this full calendar year, getting Kobe White in February, trading LaMelo Ball now, drafting Hannes Steinbeck with the 14th pick as well, a guy who can face up or play back to the basket, just a vacuum rebounder inside as well. They're adding more layers to their offense. I almost felt like last season there was, you know, they were a high volume and a high efficiency shooting team, but it was almost so reliant on the perimeter jumper that it felt like a miracle when LaMelo Ball hit that game-winning layup in the play-in tournament opener. I was like, oh my God, he actually got to the rim. Yeah. He didn't jack a jumper. And so I think they're adding layers to this team. And that's why, like, I feel when they first traded away LaMelo Ball, it felt like they were like taking a step back this year, but maybe they're actually just shuffling the pieces in a way where they could actually be, you know, better next year. I wouldn't rule that out. We'll see, like, they would have to get Jaylen Brown or some other star out of this for them to be better than having LaMelo. But at the same time, I think there's a possibility we see Charlotte take a step forward this season, depending on what happens. Yeah. Do you think that's possible, or do you see them just being worse regardless of what happened than we saw at the end of the year?
No, I mean, listen, if they add a player that's better than LaMelo, right? If they add Jaylen Brown, I think they'll be better. If they could they kick the tires on Kawhi? you know, they'd be better. Yeah. I just, you know, do they sign LeBron James? They're better. LaMelo, he's a very talented player, but there's a certain amount of, you know, just foolishness that you deal with that I think takes away from your marginal victories, right? Like, again, some of the turnover stuff, some of the poor shot selection. And if you just add a better, more consistent player into that spot, I think you're going to look at a better team. Their issues are more like, I think I worry about their big man situation. You know, what we saw, I think that Musa Diabate is a good player. He can't be your starting five. We'll see about Hannes Steinbeck and whether or not he could develop into that. Kalkbrenner is not quite a starter, in my opinion. And I think that is something that they're lacking. It's the base defense. How do you raise the floor so everyone has an easier job? Like you mentioned, relying on the outside jumper. They had a lot of wins coming back from being down because they were hot and cold sometimes from three. And they were hot more often than not, which is why they won so many games. But I do think just not having a good, simple, hey, this is our drop defensive scheme we're going to use this 70% of our defensive possessions and get through the regular season. I think that's something that they need to focus on outside of adding, you know, Jaylen Brown or whoever.
The Sun side of that deal, just to reiterate the trade details, the Suns are getting Miles Bridges, a 2029 first round pick, which is the least favorable from Utah, Cleveland, or Minnesota. And they're also getting a 2027 second, and they're sending back Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal, and a 2033 unprotected first round draft pick for Phoenix. To me, this feels very much just like Matt Ishbia, meddling Michigan State connection. They got the coach, they got the player, they got Michigan State all over the place. They got the GM, they got the Michigan State all over the place now. That's what this feels like to me more than anything else, is that they just wanted to get Miles Bridges, ex-Michigan State Spartan. To give up a 2033 unprotected first-round pick for Miles Bridges, Dave, man.
Yeah, it's a bad deal.
I do not love it. I don't love it for Charlotte, for Phoenix at all, man.
No, it's a bad deal. And I mean, listen, he's not a good enough player for an unprotected first like that. I just think that's a huge overpay. Are they going to hire Sparty to be the mascot? You know, like where does it stop? You know, at what point does this stop even being like cute, that the owner is just obsessed with the college that he went to? We saw this with the previous owner, with Robert Sarver, and that's why they drafted DeAndre Ayton number one in Luka Doncic's draft, right? I don't know. I feel like this is kind of a silly way to build a team. The Suns, in my opinion, they took a step back, especially looking forward. And I mean, frankly, like if Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal are still in Charlotte come start of the regular season, that's another way in which Charlotte got better, because having some role player depth like that coming off the bench, guys who can shoot it like this, that's going to be huge for them. I mean, you know, maybe we do need to watch out for what Charlotte's doing, because they are putting together, it looks like a deeper basketball team, if nothing else. But yeah, I don't like this for Phoenix.
Yeah, I hate it for Phoenix. It doesn't make much sense to me. It especially doesn't make much sense after trading up in the draft to go get Koa Pete, another, you know, non-shooter. And Miles Bridges is not a non-shooter, but he's a shaky shooter. You are really, really banking on Kaman Malawach, their lottery pick last year, to be an effective shooter from the center spot. And we'll see. Maybe that works out. Maybe we see him in summer league next week in Las Vegas, and he's splashing threes and looks like a star. So if you want to see Kaman Malawach splash three-pointers in Las Vegas, be sure to check out the Game Time app. You can find summer league tickets on there to do just that, if you want to watch the Come On Malawach show and all your other favorite rookies and young players in the NBA. And we'll be right back after this break. Regarding something else I wrote last night, Dave, on Yahoo Sports, was the Heat. So there was a report from the Steinline that their priority targets are 34-year-old streaky shooter Tim Hardaway Jr. and 38-year-old veteran point guard Mike Conley. Priority targets for those guys. And it's like, oh boy, oh God, if those are your priority targets, to round out the guard rotation around Davion Mitchell. Oh my God, I'm a little bit concerned there. However, my league sources have said that the Miami Heat are trying to dump Nikola Jovic and his four-year deal that starts at $16.2 million this year. They're trying to attach draft capital to other teams to try to dump him. Right now, the Heat are in a situation that the reason why they do that is because they need to open up cap space in order to be able to re-sign Norman Powell. They are hard capped at the first apron, which is $209 million. The Heat are roughly $19 million below that right now today. Norm Powell could sign with Detroit or Chicago or somebody else for more money than what the Heat are able to offer. If they dump Jovic, they could get well over $30 million in space to be able to re-sign Norm Powell. And I'll tell you what, if they're able to pull that off and get Powell back, and then their priority bench depth targets are Tim Hardaway Jr. and Mike Conley, that sure sounds way better to me than a backcourt with Davion Mitchell, Mike Conley, and Tim Hardaway, and that's it. They need to get Norm Powell back.
They need a lot. They need to figure out how they're going to keep Andrew Wiggins, because I don't think they can lose him. If Mike Conley and Tim Hardaway Jr. are your targets, I mean, is this where you landed or is this where you started? I understand that free agency is just not really a thing anymore, and they don't really have a lot of assets to trade. It's part of the reason why I'm not totally in on the Miami part of the Giannis trade, is they gave up everything. They have an empty cupboard at this point, and they don't even have a full basketball team. Did they take a step back? I don't know, because they got the best player. They got Giannis. So they're probably still a play-in team. But you just have nothing to improve with. If they can somehow wind up getting Norm Powell back, I think that that's a big step in the right direction. They will have shooters, I think, line up to come play there, because they're going to be able to get paid. And I think that they're going to have open looks because of Giannis. That being said, what quality shooters are available in free agency? How are you going to manufacture assets to get these guys? I don't see it. The Tim Hardaway move makes a lot of sense to me, just because he might be the best shooter available. But if you don't bring back Norm, I mean, it's going to be dark very fast if you're starting Tim Hardaway Jr. for some reason.
One thing I think is very intriguing is that there's three teams with traded player exceptions bigger than Jovic's $16.2 million deal. Dallas, Memphis, and Chicago. So I wonder if Chicago, coming out of nowhere as a team that could sign Norm Powell, is their way to say, you better give us that extra draft capital with Jovic, or else we'll sign Powell away. I have not heard that. I'm just speculating there. But if you're going to dump Jovic and get nothing in return back, Memphis, Dallas, and Chicago have traded, and Boston too, have traded player exceptions, but Boston would not be a team that would take you over. They're not even worth mentioning. I could see Dallas doing it too. I could see Memphis. They're younger teams. Right. Why not take a roll of the dice on Jovic, and maybe at his size, he turns into something for you. But I think Chicago, I could see them as well.
I don't know about Chicago. I think Memphis does make a lot of sense. Yeah, there's too many guys in Chicago.
Too
but
many
also,
6'9" players on the Bulls if they had.
But
Jovic.
Also the way they operate, this would be a smart move. You know what I mean? I don't expect.
But the Grizzlies,
ownership.
They just drafted Cam Boozer and Kareem Lopez as well. They get a lot of guys,
which means they don't need Jovic, right? Like it means that they could just take those draft picks and they could figure it out. Dallas, I think, could make some sense. This is if you think he is gonna develop. Like, do you think he just needs an opportunity, or maybe he's just not going to be that good? I don't really have a high evaluation of him. Like, I don't think he's necessarily someone I need to clear room to develop. And if I can get a couple of draft picks and take him into my books, and if I'm Memphis, I think that's a team that it tracks for, right? They don't need him to play. He wouldn't be a part of their future, but you would get some high value draft picks, especially as Giannis gets older down there in Miami. I don't know what that's going to look like in a couple of years. So yeah, I think you just take them, and it's not about the player. It's about the picks.
Yeah. I think it's definitely about the picks.
Like, it's a dump.
It is a dump, unfortunately, for a guy who's 23 years old, but by role player standards, he's on an albatross contract, 4 years, $62 million, when he hasn't developed at all in 4 years. He's basically plateaued since he was a teenager. Yes, like it is a role player albatross contract. And I think for Miami, you know, just a couple other names. The Miami Herald reported Buddy Hield and Chris Middleton as well. Those names don't make you too much more excited either. Just it's slim.
Middleton was still a winning player with the Wizards. I mean, like, he somehow is just going to be a winning basketball player the whole time he's in the league. Is it great that you're thinking about starting Chris Middleton in 2026? I don't know.
It's not great. It's not great at all. We had Trey Murphy as well. I reported on Yahoo Sports on Sunday night that the Pelicans have multiple offers on the table that include 2 first-round draft picks for Trey Murphy. Joe Dumars, the Pelicans general manager, has wanted 3. I'm skeptical he's going to get there. From what I understand, mm-hmm. it seems like these other teams are holding firm. I'm not even sure those offers are all real first. Some of them might be like 1 first plus a protected first or a swap. But for, you know, just for the discussion, it seems like 2 first-ish is on the table for the Pelicans from multiple teams. And the intriguing part to me regarding New Orleans is something that I've had these conversations with a handful of different executives around the league, is how these bottom of the barrel teams like New Orleans, with the new draft lottery rules, they not only have to worry about what assets they get in return for a good player, but they also can't be too bad, because right. with the draft relegation zone, the bottom 3 teams now in the NBA have 1 lottery ball removed from their odds. And so the Pelicans can't just trade Trey Murphy into like the Celtics traded player exception and get no player back, because then you're losing your best, you know, 3-point shooter, one of your best wing defenders, a versatile guy who can play in any lineup configuration on the roster, and your margin for error becomes even slimmer. If like Zion misses time, or whoever, or Herb Jones misses time, if. And you don't have Trey Murphy. When Zion misses time, it's like you need to be really careful here, because you might feel like, oh, we got that extra swap, but we didn't get a good player back. Suddenly, the floor in your team is worse than the league, and you're trying to dig your way out in March and April to get back your lottery odds. You don't want that to happen. And so that's a new variable that the Pelicans have to think about when it comes to Trey Murphy deals, that is new. Like, this is a new thing with the draft relegation zone. I just wonder how much they're actually weighing that when it comes to this right now.
Well, I had heard that they were potentially a Jaylen Brown landing spot, and that actually made a little bit of sense, because shouldn't the Pelicans be trying to compete? I mean, you have good players for, like, they're somehow worse than the Sacramento Kings when it comes to having good players on the roster and being able to win. I mean, Sacramento doesn't have that many good players, but the Pelicans do. I mean, the Pelicans always have guys that you hear about in trade rumors because they do have so much talent. I think if you add Jaylen Brown to that mix, I mean, it gives you, in my opinion, a clear direction to winning, right? Like, it's a path to winning, not just being not a loser. Trey Murphy, I mean, I don't know if he can. I don't know if they can get 3 draft picks for him, but probably should get 3 draft picks for him if that's what they're asking for. That guy immediately adds to any winning team and potentially puts him over the top. I mean, you know, you talked about Boston. If he could go there, I think that's a great fit. If somehow Denver could wind up with Trey Murphy, it'd be fantastic. I don't know that they can do it just financially. What are the Pelicans? Are the Pelicans going to be willing to go for the 2 first-round picks, or would it be, you know, 2 picks and a player, or is it holding firm and going into next season with Trey Murphy and maybe hoping you're doing this at the deadline? This is the thing that the problem I have with the Pelicans front office is I don't know which direction they're trying to go. Like, are they trying to go this development route? We're going to build up our young guys and Fears and Derek Queen, or are we going to try to remain competitive? In which case, why trade at all any of your good players? It just, unless you're going to bring back a guy like Jaylen Brown. So I'm a little bit confused in just their process, much less, you know, what they're asking. I think that 3 first-round picks is about right for him.
Yeah, I mean, two plus maybe like one fake one.
Sure.
I think feels a bit more
a swap or two, you know?
Yeah, swap. Yeah. I mean, but like three unprotected seems a little rich to me for Trey Murphy. I mean, he's a good player, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to give up five for Trey Murphy. I mean, he could become Desmond Bane in years. You know, he's still getting better. He's still on the upward trajectory here. But that is, it's an interesting thing for New Orleans. And I do think Jalen Brown should be on their radar as well. I'd be happy to trade for Brown if I were the Pelicans. And I think another team, you know, that is in this similar type of position right now is the Sacramento Kings. They're currently over the luxury tax. They are working to try to get under the tax. There's a strong possibility they just waive and extend DeMar DeRozan, who has $10 million guaranteed on his contract next season. That would effectively get them under the tax, but they wouldn't have much wiggle room to really add to the roster at all. And I've been told that they've made trade offers to teams attaching future draft capital to players currently under contract to try to get off more money to create more flexibility for more moves. But the same thing that we just talked about with New Orleans also applies to Sacramento. You can't give up too much of your proven talent. You can't get too much worse, because then you might be hurting your own position in the standings, especially in the loaded Western Conference. And like, suddenly you might be looking at second worst record in the league entering April, and you're like, oh my God, we shouldn't have waived DeMar. He was good for three more wins, and we have our full draft odds. So it's a real challenge for teams now when it comes to getting rid of good players. It's not as simple as, oh, we'll just suck. You can't suck too much anymore.
I mean, it's trouble. We're going to get some weird stuff, right? Like, is there a team that in March is going to call up Joe Johnson and say, hey, we need you, right? Are we going to see some very weird 10-day contracts? You know, hey, Mike James, can you take a break from Turkey and come back? We just need a hot bench scorer right now. It is a fascinating, I think, development here where you think about this relegation thing. I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't know, because we haven't seen it yet. But I think that when it comes to the front offices and the desperation that we're going to see out of them come February, March, when they are potentially in the bottom three, we're going to see some weird, weird stuff. But if you're the Kings, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, you might just have to eat this year. I don't know how you can justify Zach LaVine opting into his $49 million contract. I can't justify attaching a pick to try to get him off my books when he's going to fall off my books in a year anyway. I sometimes you just got to take your medicine, and they did this to themselves, right? Like, no one, you know, made them do any of the moves that they've done. I think waiving DeMar just makes a lot of sense, mostly for DeMar. Like, he can go somewhere where he can maybe compete. And it's kind of like the right thing to do for a guy at this stage of his career. But I just can't justify it, giving up any future assets to move off my bad money, period. I think that's just eat it.
We got a little piece of news related to the Miami Heat. Shyam Charania says that Andrew Wiggins intends to sign a three-year, $64 million contract to stay with the Miami Heat. So that's a little over $20 million annually for Wiggins. That feels like a good deal for the Miami Heat to retain Wiggins for that amount. And the deal will kick off. So he's opting in this year, according to Shams. Okay. And then it starts the following year. So he's staying at $30 million this year. That does not open up any cap space, to tie back to our earlier conversation regarding the hopes of signing Norm Powell. So he's not opting out. He's opting in and then signing the three-year extension. And so that does not help their salary cap situation this year. But that's a pretty good value contract for the next 3 years afterwards, though, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Wiggins is definitely, that's a great price for Wiggins. I wonder if this makes him a more attractive trade asset at some point this year, just because of that. Like, that money is so good. If they wind up figuring out that they need more stuff, like, they may have to turn him into a couple of players. I just, again, him not taking a haircut on this upcoming season doesn't bode well for them at all. And I think the path to keeping Norm Powell just got a little bit tougher.
We have really big breaking news here, Dave, to end the podcast. Ben Simmons is trying to make a return to the NBA.
The fisherman, the professional angler?
Professional, yes. Ben Simmons is trying to make a return. He was interviewed by Men's Health, and he said, I don't have a plan on where. Maybe I'll go back to Philly. Miami would be nice, and not because it's Miami. I like Eric Spoelstra. I like the Heat. I like their organization. I like the culture. You can't teach 6'10 and IQ. That's what Ben Simmons said. Maybe Ben Simmons, we could add him to the pile of priority targets for the Miami Heat, Dave. What do you think?
Speaking of weird signings in March, I mean, that kind of let's do it now. Yeah. Let's just go ahead and do it now. Look, if there's one thing that the Miami Heat need, it's another 6'10 guy who can't shoot. I mean, let's just go ahead and this is exactly an A1 target for them. I hope Ben Simmons, if he wants to come back, that he gets a chance. If he's healthy, I mean, this guy was a supremely talented player, one of the most unique defensive players I think to ever play in the NBA. It's just we've seen this so many times. I mean, let's see what happens. I hope he gets a camp invite from someone, and maybe he surprises us. Is he willing to play in Summer League? I mean, it's coming up, you know. Go play in Summer League. Show us you're healthy.
That's a great idea. Play in Summer League if you're Ben Simmons. Go dominate these.
Go shoot
these
a bunch 19, of threes.
20. Well, you don't want to do that. He shoots with the wrong hand. You can't have Simmons clanking the ball off the backboard in Summer League unless he's shooting right-handed. You know, then if Ben Simmons shows up to camp and he's shooting with the correct hand, his strong right hand, I'll give him a max. Just for him having the courage to finally do it. Thanks.
The
Ben.
Thing is, if he's healthy, if he's healthy, he could be a backup big man. It's just, I don't know if he can be healthy. And you know, it's kind of a sad story with Ben Simmons. And so I would love to see him get a little redemption arc of some sort. It would be amazing.
It is crazy just how it all went downhill after that pass under the basket in Atlanta. Yeah. That's really where it all changed. That's the last time he looked great. Was that
we don't
year.
See we don't see the basketball yips nearly as often as like a sport like baseball. You know, like Chuck Knoblauch famously not being able to throw from second base. This is the worst case of the yips I've ever seen a player get, and that includes Draymond Green, who stopped shooting layups for a couple years. You know, Draymond eventually it came back. But with Ben, it just he wouldn't even look at the rim. I mean, it's rough.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, he was one of the more unique defensive players we've seen in recent NBA history. He was awesome in Philly. He really was a great defensive player. It's just offensively never could figure out beyond playmaking, and just wasn't the right fit for him. It wasn't the right fit in the prime of his career, and it's a shame the injuries have taken over and whatever's going on mentally as well. So I'm rooting for Ben Simmons to get an opportunity in the league. I think it'd be a great comeback story if he's able to find a role on a winning team as a connective piece surrounded by shooters off the bench. That'd be really nice to see happen, but I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Miami, maybe Philly. I doubt it with either roster. Maybe he needs to prove himself on the Sacramento Kings Summer League roster. Maybe that's what it's going to be. Anything else? Anything else we missed? Anything else sticking out to you, Dave, in free agency starting this week that we didn't talk about?
No, I mean, I think that the biggest thing is just the overwhelming number of trades that feel like they're on the precipice of happening as we're about to open free agency. This feels like a whole new world. I mean, we get trades every year, but there's a lot of microtransactions happening via trade that used to be, it would be free agency moves. And now this whole landscape has gotten so weird and the second apron is really forcing teams to make hard choices. Whether that's good for the league or not, I'm not sure. I don't know where you stand on this. I happen to think parity is pretty fun. It gives a lot of hope to, you know, half the league, essentially. When you go into a season now, you don't know who the champ's going to be. I mean, we didn't know the Knicks were going to do this in April, you know, much less in October. So I think that's the only thing that's on my mind right now as I'm watching the rumors kind of roll in and I'm hearing about some of the deals that might be happening. Is so much of free agency now is conducted because of and through the trade market.
Yep, and we'll see what happens there. We already know the Knicks, Mitchell Robinson could walk because of the second apron, the unwillingness to pay it, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think guys, you know, like Ayton opting in with the Lakers, despite not making much money, that's because there's not a lot of money out there.
Life comes at you fast.
Right? Yeah, it sure does, right? Like for Ayton, and like De'Ron Sharp re-upped with the Nets. He didn't test the market because there's not much money out there. So just going to re-sign. And I think free agency feels like it's kind of dead in some ways. And yet the trade market feels incredibly vibrant and beautiful and fun. And we'll see how this week transpires. It could be a lot of fireworks. I'm hoping for a lot of fireworks. I hope we get LeBron James and Anthony Davis at Golden State with Stephen Curry and Draymond Green. It would just be so fun if that happens. It'd be amazing. I hope we get it. Dave, thank you so much for joining me today. People can always check you out on the Athletic NBA Daily. And yeah, man, have a good day, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much to Dave Dufour for joining me on today's episode. Thank you to Brad, Sarah, and the whole team for producing today's episode. We'll be back again definitely on Thursday, but who knows? Could get some breaking news. Could be back earlier in the week as well with an emergency podcast. Have a good week, everybody.